Hello everyone, this is Stan, your favorite iGaming podcast host, and today I'd like to share you the story of two selected use cases where we have applied predictive analytics to boost the results of marketing teams. This episode refers to the experience of our implementations for European online casino and sportsbook operators coming from regulated markets. And since the same rules and techniques are universal and apply to other verticals as well, I'm confident this will turn out to be a very interesting and insightful story for you. So now just buckle up and tune in. So during one of the conferences that I have attended in October, in the roundtable talks during the event wrap-up, I got asked this question from someone from the audience. It went more or less like this. Over the last 2 years, we've been all hearing pretty much everywhere that there's AI, ChatGPT, LLM, you name it. It will all automate our work. And same goes for decision-making then. AI is expected to recommend us the best decision or take the decision for us. So how do you see the evolving roles of data and analytics with this context in mind? And well, what I said back then was that surely AI, ChatGPT, LLMs are technological advancements that everyone has heard of, but perhaps without never fully covered the consequences. So I believe that we have never fully covered the consequences and the impact of those changes. Basically, data and analytics is here to stay, and new advancements will even reinforce the need for a strong grip of your data. As they say, garbage in, garbage out, or there's perhaps even more direct terms that you might have heard or sayings around this line, but the principle still holds water, and strong data foundation is the enabler of AI and not the substitute or competitor. So I would even say that what's more predictive and prescriptive analytics, which sometimes this is getting confused and it's got somehow rebranded as AI as well, these are things that have been with us already for years. It's the computational power and technological capabilities that have changed and that allowed to tap into huge data sets, what you have heard of hiding under the name of big data. The methods are the same, yet what we call AI, yes, it is a breakthrough. Yes, this is a revolution to a certain degree, but I would say that nevertheless, we're in a logic of continuation and not necessarily disruption. And this is what actually inspired me to record this episode and to tell you the story of AI techniques that exist for decades and that benefit businesses across all industries, especially outside of iGaming, and which should be on your roadmap, the sooner the better. Now, my plan for today is really simple. First, let me introduce some definitions and terms, and I just want to make sure that we're on the same page. After, I'd like to present you the first story of an operator who implemented anti-churn on top of their data. And finally, I'll walk you through the second story of a sportsbook who tackled promotion uplift modeling, so basically answering the question which promotion really worked out and which did not. So when I say predictive analytics, what is it specifically? If you've listened to the first episode of the season, perhaps you already remember, maybe you even know it by heart, but let's reiterate just in case. So typically, Gartner Institute research identifies and pinpoints four types of analytics, ranging from the most basic till the most advanced. All of them play their own role, so let's just go through them right now. At the very beginning, companies ask questions like, how things are actually standing today? What's the state of our business? Such as, what was my GGR for yesterday? Was it better than last month? Was it at the expected or forecasted or targeted level? Did I get more new players, more new FTDs, or more active players, greater engagement? How's my year-to-date numbers? How are they doing? And so on. All of that is pretty easy in terms of complexity, and it brings a lot of value as it gets you a clear picture of where you're standing. So that's what we call the descriptive analytics. It's about describing the reality. The next level, moving up the ladder, is diagnostic analytics. slightly bigger complexity, and greater value unlocked. It's all about determining the reasons why your business is standing where it stands today, identifying the drivers behind the performance. So say that we speak about the GGR, do we have specific acquisition channels that drive our growth? Is it due to the marketing campaigns we're launching? Does the effect of the day of the week, day of the month, or other seasonality factors apply to our numbers? It's just to name a few examples. The next level, even greater complexity but more value unlocked, I think this is the most interesting part that will be the core of our episode for today, predictive analytics. It goes together. The next step is prescriptive analytics. They are both kind of connected. Both are about making forecasts, enabling layer segmentation, identification of suspicious behavior, and so on. Predictive analytics will speak about what will happen, while prescriptive analytics is when the human is not implicated at all in the business process. So this is the automation that takes care of deciding and executing the outcome of that decision. For example, in the context of promotion, setting up automatically the right promotion to the right people at the right moment in time. Now we may ask, why does it matter after all? Why are you telling me all of this? Well, let me give you 6 reasons to that. First of all, decisions are fully automated. If not automated, then greatly accelerated when you have all the data and recommendations at hand. Number 2, you know what to spend your money for. You know how to squeeze the most of your marketing budgets. Number 3, you know your customer. With advanced analytics like predictive analytics that we discussed today, you expect to have not only the holistic picture, what we call sometimes 360 degree customer 360 or player 360 degree vision across all the touch points, but also the attribution to clusters and behavioral patterns. And all of those are means to reduce churn. So number 4, number 5, increase engagement. And finally, number 6, ensure that your player base stays healthy within your sustainable business model as per the legal requirements and the framework that you're operating within. One final remark that I would like to make to this point, diagnostic and descriptive analytics, so the first 2 levels, this will do 80% of the job. You certainly know the Pareto rule, 80-20. The first 2 do the 80%. So if you got the right tools in place that help you answer those questions about where you're standing and what are the drivers, you're already doing really, really well. At the same time, remember that what makes the difference is those remaining 20%. So since the first 80% are typically less complex, easier to achieve, most operators venture into this area. And this is exactly in this last part, the predictive and prescriptive analytics. This is where you can make the difference and stand out and be ahead of the competitors, because not everyone will have the perseverance and the dedication to follow that path. Now, when you want to run this kind of predictive and prescriptive analytics in-house, you need to implement what we call a DMP or data management platform or data platform. And if you'd like to learn more what the data platform specifically is, you can just go ahead and check out, because we already covered that in the episode number 12. That's when we spoke about it a bit more extensively. But anyway, let's just do a very, very quick recap. So the data platform, there's 3 main components. Storage and data organization, let's call it the number 1 part. I call it data warehouse. The number 2, responsible for data reporting and visualization, we can call it reporting analytics. And number 3 is the data science modeling. And each of those 3 items play a vital role for your analytics. Now just let's go quickly through each of them. So first one, the data warehouse, your single source of truth. Again, feel free to give it a go to the episode number 12. Data warehouse, data lake, lake house. Sometimes you might hear all those terms. For the sake of our discussion, I'm using them interchangeably, because at the end of the day, it's all about fulfilling one purpose, storing and keeping all data from all systems in one place, putting it together, connecting, harmonizing, standardizing, and enabling answering all the business requests that need a solid data foundation. Just like when you build a house, this is going to be your foundation on top of which you will be putting up those walls with the greatest painter, with a very nice roof, with a cool garden, but you always start with the foundation. And this is the single source of truth, will be the foundation that underpins any further efforts in the area of data and analytics. This is going to be your enabler. Without this component, the analytical teams will be fighting over and over the same challenge that would never exist in the world that has a data warehouse. So it's about extracting and consolidating various data points. Typically, whenever you ask a data analyst or data scientist, hey, tell me please, what takes up most of your time during the average day of the work or during an average week? Data scientists will always tell you 70% of my time is eaten up by data cleaning, issues with data quality. Again, remember the principle, garbage in, garbage out. If you don't take care of a proper foundation, you'll get irrelevant results anyway. So whenever you have this kind of tool in place, like a data warehouse or a data lakehouse, not only you remove 70% of the, let's say, more mundane job from a data scientist perspective off the table, let him concentrate on what matters most. So on the modeling and on definition and analysis and exploration. Just to give you an example, when we were doing a churn prediction for one of the operators, actually I'm referring to the story that I'm going to present to you in a second, but a very interesting case that we have found in the data. At a specific moment in time, we wanted to filter only selected players that had a defined lifespan. For this reason, we had to calculate what we call the length of relationship, so the number of days between the last day of activity and registration. So let's say if I registered 1 month ago and played today, my length of relationship would be 30. If I registered today and the last time I played was today, the distance in days is zero. So let's say it's zero. So we all agree that this value always has to be zero or above, correct? Right. And that's when I'm going to surprise you. What I found, players with negative lifespan, meaning that they would play before they registered. So as you can imagine, if all the data looks like this, just to give you one example, but imagine there's many more cases that you'll discover. No matter what model you create, if you don't clean it before, it's going to be useless. You won't be getting any farther. Okay, enough about this one. Number two, your reporting and data visualization capabilities within the data platform. Many of you heard about Power BI, Tableau, Looker. These are all tools that fulfill the same purpose. So presenting data, making it easy to consume and available on your computer or mobile phone, if you'd like, with all the relevant information at your fingertips. In most cases, it will perfectly serve the descriptive diagnostic analytics, whereas for predictive and prescriptive analytics, you might want to use those tools, for example, to perform exploration, get a good grasp of the big picture that will later fuel your predictions, your predictive models, and your prescriptions. Reporting will serve all the departments, so be it operations, marketing, customer service, RG, compliance, even the finance guys. Finally, moving on to the last component, we spoke about the data foundation, warehouse, lake house, you name it, reporting. Now, let's take a look at the item number three, so the data science models. And this component lies at the heart of predictive analytics, even despite the fact that it is impossible to be successful without the former two. The data science part will be delivered, for example, with Python coding or R coding based on various packages that allow you to work on, say, early detection for behavioral changes of players, understanding who's more likely to churn than the others, making accurate segmentation, uncovering hidden patterns and affinities, and so on. Finally, you can also build very interesting recommendation engines like recommended games for players or promotions, and you can calculate the effectiveness of marketing activities. Out of those six cases, I have selected two that I would like to emphasize for today. Specifically, it's about the churn prediction and anti-churn implementation, plus the marketing effectiveness, so the last one I mentioned. I selected these two examples as in the machine learning models, we take different approaches depending on the use case. So typically, we've got two types of use cases. One is when we want to forecast, and the latter is when we want to explain. So the churn model is going to be the case when we're forecasting something, while the marketing effectiveness is more from explanatory perspective. Moving on to the first story. Let me tell you the story about an operator working on a regulated market where the situation looked more or less like this. We've got 3,000 new players joining every single month. Maybe 750 stay with us after 2 months. So it's gonna be a quarter of the newcomers. If you sum that up every year, I should have between, say, 8,000 to 9,000 players. So why after 2 years, I have maybe half of it, so 4,400 players active, while I was expecting the double? What can I do to improve on those numbers? And this was specifically the question raised by the online director. In other words, the idea was to improve on the retention and reactivation activities that they were performing. As we all know, and this is what Michal Madanov mentioned, and I liked a lot the saying, the biggest room in the world is the room for improvement. And everybody in the company was very well aware that it applied to them quite well. That's how the project of introducing anti-churn strategies saw the light. Now, the business question is as follows. If we want to address retention and anticipate players who are likely to churn in the upcoming weeks, do we observe a pattern or similarity in the behavior of the player? Is there anything that suggests that they should be the recipient of our newest retention campaign? This is exactly the idea that stands behind the model. The first question, how do we define a lost player? Here, we call it sensor data, so it's not like in insurance or Netflix that you can cancel the subscription and you've got identified, marked the exact date when the customer leaves. No, it's quite the opposite. Did you stop playing? Time may lapse, the player might not play, which may mean that they have left, or quite the opposite, that they'll be back soon. Many players will be dormant and will follow a regular or irregular pattern, which we can mathematically dissect. Data quality is key. Players, whenever they get banned, they create a new account, they get banned once again. And this yields a lot of duplicate and fake accounts that need to be properly filtered and matched. Finally, part of the player population will be highly likely to connect only during the times that the operator launches a specific promotion, and they jump between various operators to get free bonus, and that's it when it comes to their activity. Typically, you won't target them when you implement your anti-churn. So what was our approach? The development approach follows a cycle. Every model is developed in cycles. Typically, it's cycles composed of 8 steps, and every single model is getting better and better with every single cycle that we make. So typically, once we have defined the problem of anticipating potential levers, we move on to the next stages that utilize the data warehouse and the reporting. So the task is defined. Now we need to explore the data and properly frame ourselves in the context of the task. So once we perform any exploration based on the clean data that we have from the data warehouse, which is the perfect scenario, we're moving quickly to the modeling part. Typically most interesting for the data scientist, how to actually craft the best model that has the best predictive power and brings in the biggest value to the business. This model, typically, when it's ready, in most cases, it's applied only at a prototype level. And then you need to ask the data engineers and the whole team to expand the model to apply to the full player base. This is what we call the operationalization, which is then followed by, once the model has been tested, validated, and applied to scale, we're moving on to production, and off we go. We can use it already. After, we want to closely monitor how it's performing, because the way it's performing over time might be changing, so we want to keep a closer look at what is the predictive power. And in the most typical scenarios, after the first version, it's usually a starter. We are usually pretty happy with the first results, but we're getting to really good scores after 2 or 3 iterations, so this kind of cycles for the development perspective. What was the final outcome for the anti-churn one? Where eventually the marketing department receives a list of players that have the highest propensity to leave and who should be the target of any personalized and specific communication. In order to measure the effectiveness of such models, beforehand, we can create a specific graph, which is called lift curve. And in this scenario, when we created the lift curve graph, we generated, based on the data, we could see that And we could see it pretty clearly, as it was depicted on that graph, that picking up 20% of the players who are most likely to leave, as designed by the model, is 3.5 times more effective than doing it so at random. So using our intuition or a selected subset of KPIs, because here you got on one hand the model that gives you a sorted list, hey, you should target those, say, 100, 200, 1,000 players, you name it. It all depends on the capacity of your marketing teams, how many people you can reach out to. And it's going to be 3.5 times more effective than if you ask the marketing team to select them manually or you just go by random. Thanks to this model, when we tested that against control groups, the operator was able to generate additionally plus 23% GGR lifetime out of those player groups that were coming from the targeted cohorts. So basically, it just opens a new stream for GGR. Quite a nice feat. Now, the second case. I'm referring to a topic that you have certainly encountered many, many times, as it always sparks debates in the companies. Typically, picture this. There's an operator in sportsbook running multiple promotions in parallel. These promotions have different objectives, different target groups. Sometimes they're connected with a specific promotion. Sometimes they are event-based, like for Halloween, Christmas, New Year, World Cup, you name it. And now the question that always keeps getting asked, it is, what was the state before and after the promotion? Did it have any impact on the GGR? Did it activate players and motivate them to stay longer and have some more fun? What was the uplift? Was there any? Typical comparisons of like revenue, stake sizes, volumes, play days, these usually lead to misleading conclusions. As you would expect, we have strong seasonality in the data. And just looking at before and after, you're missing a crucial piece of information from the picture. Whenever you'd like to decide whether it was worth running a campaign or not, the ultimate question that we aim to answer is as follows. Which promotion really made a difference? Which ones should be repeated? What is the mechanic that works best? Which promotions, in turn, should be ditched and never offered again? And here, once again, the devil's in the details, specifically within the data that we have. First of all, how do we want to treat historical promotions? Shall we make historical assumptions for past promotions? Or perhaps quite the opposite? Maybe we want to incorporate in our modeling only promotions since the start of the uplift calculation process. Another consideration, what's the scope of data attributes that we have at hand? Do we have everything in terms of descriptions, specificities, characteristics for the campaign times, target audience, participation requirements, eligibility, and so on? Then, another consideration, seasonality. As I mentioned before, it's crucial. There's two ways we can tackle it. One way is that we build a model that incorporates seasonality effects, and this extraction of the seasonality is applied inside of the model. The other approach, we take the seasonality outside of the data and we continue the modeling based on de-seasonalized data, especially with respect to like peak day of the month, peak months of the year, and so on. They are the two approaches that can be applied. I'm more of a fan of incorporating it inside of the model instead of removing the seasonality and playing with the seasonalized data. But just to mention that there's this kind of consideration that should be made at this stage. Moving on, segmentation. Another important point that you should account for. The best is to apply the models on top of existing segmentation, especially in the context of reducing dimensionality and complexity of the model. Imagine you would like to make predictions for every single player, how many models you'd need to build. Much better to build a model per segment than a model per player, even from a very typical statistical perspective. In statistics, there is a term that we call degrees of freedom. And let's say, just to kind of briefly get our head around this topic, what we want to achieve is that we want our model to be robust, that whenever there's new changes in the behavior of the player, that our model suddenly does not become completely obsolete. We want it to be more stable and more long-lasting. For it, we need to apply more degrees of freedom, so we need to get more data around less variables, more data around less hypotheses and less factors. So we need to be really careful and cautious. Otherwise, there's very often the phenomenon of what we call overfitting. So based on the historical data, we are perfectly able to predict how would the player behave in the past. But if we try for tomorrow, it's not applying anymore. And we want our models to be robust and long-lasting. Again, I cannot stress that out enough. Finally, how to account for the competition? Imagine Euro 2024. We may run a promotion and everyone else is also running promotions too. How to make sure what part of the results is affected by the competitors' promotions? This again can be incorporated. It's very tricky, but it's also something that we should think about. With respect to the promotion uplift calculation, our initial objective, we decided to take a stepwise approach. To start with, exploration, so exploratory analysis, the first step. Just like for churn prevention algorithm, you need to be confident what features can be identified, what can be applied to the model, what is the specificity of your player base, do they stand out in a specific way around one dimension or another dimension around specific attributes and characteristics. Then we moved on to segmentation using technique which is called K-means clustering. This allows us to have a clear distinction and understanding what are different groups of players based on their demographic activity criteria. So here it could be based on the playtime, stake size, favorite day of the week, favorite category, and so on. And after identifying four various clusters, adding manual segmentation based on demographic data on top, we could proceed with performing what we call panel regression. So this is applying a model that explains the GGR based on the different data attributes and variables. So let's say we want to explain why the specific level of GGR has been achieved on a specific day by a specific segment of players. Is it due to, let's say, a fixed independent part that whatever we do, whatever we will apply, there's anyway going to be a base level of GGR. Let's call it a base level. There's going to be a part that is dependent upon every campaign and a set of other KPIs. Maybe there's going a part which is specific to the segment that we're discussing, and there's going a part that changes in the time. All of that, where does it lead us to? We get separate coefficient for every campaign. So let's say that the coefficients tell us what is the contribution of a specific factor to the number of GGR. So let's say if my GGR was 200k, is it 20% due to the base level and maybe 20% due to the campaign and another 15% due to this specific segment? Just to give you more or less the explanation, where do we land at? At the end of the day, the effect of your campaign is getting fully isolated. So then you know what worked well, you know what did not work at all, and you identify, thanks to the data visualization, what were the common characteristics of the successful campaigns. This allowed the operator to reassign the budgets during the next quarter and onwards, and we help them to generate 26% more GGR out of the same budget over the next quarter. So to sum it up, a few concluding remarks. First one, don't forget the basics. I cannot emphasize it enough how important the solid data foundation, just like when you're building the house. The solid data foundation for any predictive analytics and any forward thinking visionaries and strategists is just the foundation. It's just the basics without which you will stumble upon your own steps. Second, be perseverant. It's called data science for a reason. The similarity with science lies in the fact that just like in science, we're doing experiments. Sometimes you get meaningful results and insights at the first attempt. Sometimes the experiment does not go along the expected route from the very first try. Finally, go stepwise. Just to underline that it's 100 times better to start with a simple model. It already brings you value. Instead of trying to over-engineer, craft the perfect model, I've heard the story many times that there's a whole team of data scientists that has been sitting for 1 year. They're recreating the perfect model. Just at the end of the day, 1 year, fast forward 1 year later, the model was still not in production. I would much rather have a simple model in place that works and that can be used instead of having the perfect model that will impress everyone, but not available to the users. So not in production even 1 year later. Well, I hope that you guys like this episode as we are approaching the end. That's going to be it for today. Time for me to sign off. This was Stan, and as usual, remember, keep rolling with the data.